Hey, this is Taylor.
This is Jake.
And this is Dan.
And this is Unicorn Finders, where we are on the search to illuminate the elusive unicorn factor in everyday people, businesses, and relationships. Hope you enjoy.
All righty. So, everybody, I'm back in my jail cell.
Yeah, you are.
Every Thursday, I go ahead and check myself into the local county penitentiary. Is that the word?
Penitentiary, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I say, hey, I need a room for my Zoom call.
Work up so it doesn't look like I'm here.
Yeah, yeah. No, again, it is, for those of you who don't think I'm joking, I'm in a very nice coffee shop. The outlet is just close to this wall. So, Dan, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. It's good to be back. It's been, I can't believe it's been a week since I last saw you, but good to catch up and lots to talk about today.
A lot to talk about today. So for those of you tuning in, welcome to the Unicorn Finders. Me and Dan started this thing back almost 4 years ago now, which is kind of crazy. Next month will be our 4 year anniversary, which is crazy. But basically, we want an excuse to hang out with each other. We've gone through some iterations, and I would say we're even iterating right now. We are. I really do enjoy talking to Dan about just business stuff. Based off our listeners and kind of interactions lately, I think a lot of other people like it too. So we're still interviewing startups, but honestly, a really good clip is out of 4 weeks a month, I think two startups and kind of two chit chats, I think is actually a pretty good cadence, which is kind of going back, Dan, to what you originally wanted for the pod anyways, which is just to hang out and talk tech.
That's right. No, a lot to talk about. Full circle moment. Obviously, this is it's a full circle moment. I think the biggest thing that we're noticing is that every single week we come on and there's, you know, excitement. There's times that we need to, you know, exercise some caution in the market and try to tell you maybe what we're seeing. But, you know, on the flip side, some things look bleak. You know, I know we're going to talk about layoffs and things of that nature here soon. But sometimes we need to add some positivity. So we try to add a little balance to maybe what you're hearing out in the real world. And you know, I think that both you and I's experience as well as exposure to the market allows us to do that. We appreciate everybody listening each and every week.
100%. So let's dive in, man. I want to get started. So I have a list of topics I want to get through. I think this is a fascinating one. I actually saw this morning. I was like, I got to add it. I want to talk about it. But this is from the Future Party, an email newsletter I get. It says, startups are responsible for big tech's innovation. It said, big tech is credited for having creative ideas, but a recent study suggests that startups generate much more innovation than the large companies who capitalize on them. Basically, it dives into how many patents are filed. Basically, it says that startups are obviously out-patenting. I don't really think that's even a word.
Yeah.
Obviously, big tech. What are your thoughts on this, man? Because I think a lot of people, I think the pie in the sky or the star in the sky or whatever the saying is, words are hard this morning, is like, I want to work at big tech. But I think people really miss out on an opportunity to learn a crap ton of startups.
Yeah, no, I think 100%. You know, I think that there's probably a couple things, and I'd want to know a little bit more about the research. And obviously, the research hasn't shown this, but I think that there's a couple things. I think one is a lot of people that come from startup or that do startups have come from bigger tech companies. Maybe they got a buyout, they got some equity, you know, huge cash bonus, that kind of stuff. So there's been a lot of money infused to people that are now, you know, creating startups. You know, I know a lot of people think of your Mark Zuckerbergs in college and in those that create startups when they're 22, 23 years old. But a majority of the successful startups are started by people in their late 30s, 40s, and even early 50s that had that extra experience. So it doesn't surprise me that innovation is a little bit slower at large tech companies. And I'll tell you why here in a second. But I think a lot of that might have to do with some bureaucracy. But I think a lot of big tech and I think a lot of big companies are in acqui-hire mode anyway, right? I think why should you go try to be innovative and create and patent all these ideas when you can go and acquire the talent, acquire the patents and acquire the companies, right? We've seen so much consolidation in tech anyway. So, you know, it might just be one of those situations where big tech's going out and just saying, hey, instead of spending a ton of money on R&D and trying to create new ideas that we don't know if there's going to be any success in it, why don't we just go acquire the company that's successful, right? You've seen it with Alphabet, Google, Meta, Facebook, you know, a lot of these big, you know, huge companies you're seeing it with really anybody that you would think is a big tech company is going to saying, hey, we're just going to go acquire that tech anyway, right? Get a more proven idea. It's kind of your inorganic versus organic growth idea.
100%. Yeah, a few comments here. Jonathan, it's good to see you this morning. Good morning. Patent holder me agrees on the startup point. Yeah, agreed. And again, I mean, this is, and again, this article is, it's very brief, it's very small, but I do think it's a little bit of a jumping off point for the conversation today, because they focus on patents filed. That was the focus. And so yes, like if you're looking at just in terms of pure innovation and startups are out patenting big corporations, that inherently makes sense, right? And so like I understand that if you watch this or listen to this in the future, like, yeah, done. But what I'm saying is I think a lot of times, and Dan, I do want to talk about, I want to go to the labor market real quick.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of hiring going, and it's mainly on the startup side right now too. Or smaller companies, that is.
Yeah. We're seeing, you know, obviously some massive layoffs. I think the data, let me just pull up the article here.
Dan did some research. Dan came to play this
morning. I did. Yeah. It says companies announced the highest level of job cuts since early 2023. A potential trouble spot for labor market. Oh, sorry. 82,307 layoffs, a jump of 136% from December, although still down 20% from the same period a year ago. It was the second highest layoff total and the lowest planned hiring level for the month of January in data going back to 2009. I think we can all agree that that's, or both of us can agree that we're seeing that in the market. We're seeing a slowdown in the pace of hiring. I think we're seeing a slowdown in a lot of, you know, your R&D projects, your non-revenue generating projects, and that kind of work is still slow. I think that there's still a consolidation in terms of what type of hiring we're getting. But let's be clear here. Looking at very large tech company layoffs, I know UPS announced a layoff of 12,000 people, Meta, Alphabet, they've all announced layoffs. Microsoft have announced layoffs in the month of January. Let's be clear here. Not all of that has to do with them cutting business as much as it has to do as them reporting to shareholders that they're doing things to cut and trim.
Correct.
The fat, right, if you will, right? So I want to be clear that when we look at layoffs, are we trying to do this as to an appeasement of shareholders, or are we doing this because everybody else is doing it and it's easy to cut low performers, or are we doing it because the business is being cut and slashed? Because everything that we're seeing in the market is consumer spending is still an all-time high. Business activity is still high.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that whenever we see these large numbers, you always have to put a little asterisk with a C more below footnote.
Yeah. And so I pulled this off the Pragmatic Engineer. It's an amazing email newsletter. I recommend everybody checking it out, the Pragmatic Engineer. So he included this graphic, Dan. So I wanted to pull it up because we kind of went this way. Fascinating graphic here, which actually, if I'm looking at this, when I was still at Vaco, I can see like this is true, right? Like literally we started to feel it in Q3, and then just Q1 of 2023 was brutal. But look where we're at, right? And this newsletter came out this week. So this is still accounting for the layoffs that occurred in January.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I mean,
it's kind of a fascinating model here.
Yeah. I think planned hiring, you know, the article says it, the planned hiring is down. I think a lot of companies, and I think a lot of people as well, are in a moment of trepidation or just pause, right? I think a lot of companies right now, or a lot of individuals right now are saying, hey, you know, the situation that I know and the situation that I'm in might be a little bit better than the unknown situation, or maybe jumping for that job. You know, salaries certainly aren't increasing at the same pace that they were in 2020, 2021, 2022, you know, so is that extra $10,000 worth it? I know that that's a lot of money, but of course, $10,000 is worth it in some circumstances, right? But I do think that there's a lot of trepidation in the market right now. And I think there's just a lot of hesitancy by everybody still trying to figure things out. The Federal Reserve did not cut rates the other day. There was an anticipation that they might do that. That eases corporate lending, allows for more hiring, you know, eases the balance sheet a little bit. So those are things that I think we're still waiting on. I just feel like right now, and I think you and I agree, is we're just kind of in like a little bit of an economic purgatory right now, where things are going well in a lot of cases, but things are also going poorly in some other areas. And it's like, well, where do we balance that? And companies are trying to figure that out right now. And I think everybody always looks at people that don't apply to them to look for guidance, right? Like we've talked about like a mid-sized, you know, $200-300 million company looking at like Alphabet doing layoffs. It's like, listen, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they report to shareholders and they need to drive, you know, what their costs are, right? And we don't even talk about the people that get laid off that just get brought back as contractors, because OpEx compared to CapEx budgets, everything else gets a little wonky. But I'll say this, and I think, you know, you and I have talked about it, is like companies need to start looking at data that applies to them and their size companies and start to really trust their own data rather than always just looking at these huge monolithic companies.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, so our favorite podcast group chat, they brought up kind of an interesting data point, or they were inquiring about an interesting data point. And they're like, I'd be curious if these companies that are laying off right now, right? Because the list I have on my notes right now is like, so here are the major companies that have announced or implemented labor cuts so far in 2024. Google, Discord, Citibank, Amazon, Twitch, Nike, Intel, BlackRock, Rentor, OneRay, United Software, eBay, Salesforce. So they, I would be curious.
Yeah. Run through that
the group
list
chat guy point? Said this too. Sure. I'll do it again. Google, Discord.
Just go Citibank. Go a little slower. Hold on. So Google, publicly traded. Discord, I don't know. Citi, definitely publicly traded. I know United Software is on there, definitely publicly traded. Intel, publicly Amazon, traded. Where Twitch. Else? Amazon, publicly Twitch. Traded. Twitch, I don't know. No, I think they are.
Not. Nike.
Oh, publicly traded.
Nike. Intel.
Publicly traded. Publicly traded.
BlackRock. Is BlackRock?
Definitely publicly Another. Traded.
Okay, that's what I thought. Rent the Runway.
Don't know. Wouldn't be surprised if they are or are not.
Unity Software, eBay, Salesforce.
Unity is publicly in Salesforce, right? So PayPal. In the comments there as well. So, you know, again, you're seeing large numbers getting cut at these large companies. Part of that is because they have to report, you know, when you lay off a certain number of people, so it becomes public information. But beyond that, we still are seeing a bit of an uptick in hiring as a whole. At least we're starting to see it. We started to see it the probably middle to end of Q4, and then through January, we're starting to see an uptick. It's just a little slower, and it's not the pace that it was. And I think people got used to that pace of, oh, I get my resume submitted, you know, 2 days later, I'm getting an interview. A week later, I have an offer in hand, right? So I think that now you've just probably extended the amount of time to an offer for, you know, by probably 50 or 75%, unfortunately.
Yeah. And then let's see here. So Emmett comes in here. Emmett's good to see you. Seeing stories from people that offers are getting pulled after they try to negotiate. Dan, have you seen anything at all?
I mean, it happened to me last year.
Are you serious?
$5,000 on a $190,000 role. Wow. I don't see that a lot, and I hate to, you know, say you dodged a bullet. I do think upfront and honest communication. I'm going to play both sides of this coin here. I'm going to piss everybody off. Sure. So a couple things. One, just because you think that you're worth something and a company deems you worth something else, like that's the part of negotiation that you may never be able to prove to them that you're worth $10,000 more. Right. I think a lot of times companies also do a bait and switch approach, saying, hey, you know, we have a budgeted position of up to $100,000, but in reality, they want to be at 90, because then now you're worried about internal employment equity and everybody else at that salary. So maybe that's what the pay band is, but they don't want to do that. I think it's very disingenuous to pull an offer at the negotiation table unless you're just too far off. Now, you know, I think that often you hear one side of that story of, hey, all I wanted was $5,000 or $10,000 more. Sometimes people can be rude. People can be offended. There's usually some other reason why an offer gets pulled if it's that kind of amount. But it also wouldn't surprise me. I've seen a number of companies pull back internships. I've seen a number of large investment companies pushing their classes that they hired from June, July of last year until January of this year, even, you know, June into next year. So I'm seeing a little bit of that. I haven't heard much about that. But also, like, you may have dodged a bullet if a company is just going to pull your offer if you're trying to negotiate, because they have to understand that both sides here are trying to come in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, we're dealing with an offer right now. The candidate wanted $5K more. The CTO doesn't love the fact because they're trying to hire so many. He goes, if we have to come up 5 to 10K on every single hire over 15 hires, like, that's a fair amount of money, which I understand that. But then also the engineering director we're dealing with was like, I don't want to lose an offer that went through three rounds over 5K. Right. So, you know, I definitely think there's a push and pull. Go ahead.
No, I was listening.
Okay. So there's I just think, sorry. There is. I think it may be the AirPods or maybe the internet in my jail cell. Who knows? But, I think when it comes to negotiating, I think if you're working with a recruiter, ask the recruiter about the company, how they'll take it. If they've had experiences with this, if you're on your own, ask the internal recruiter, hey, I'm thinking about pushing back. But again, when it comes to negotiation, you have to have a reason. Right. If you're just like, hey, I just want 5K more. And they're like, well, why? And you're just like, because like that doesn't do anything. Yeah. But it's like, hey, I need 5K more because the y'all's benefits are an extra X a month. And I want to be able to make that up. Right. Like if you can give specifics, that helps negotiations so much more.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. I think that anytime we're in the negotiation, you have to have some reason to push back. And you also have to know, if they say no, what is my answer then, right? Because neither party wants to go, you know, enter on the wrong side of the equation of being upset with one another or feel like one was trying to take advantage of the other. Being upfront, honest about communication. If you get to a second round interview, you know, I think it's worth asking for benefits and benefit costs, right? Not just like the benefit book. I think all of that goes into a negotiation.
Yeah, look at all, sometimes people all of just, it.
Right. You know, because for some people, they're like, hey, I want 150. Okay, great. But you're also saving $12,000 a year on benefits by joining this company. So in reality is 142, you come on the better end of that. So I think it's always worth doing your research. It's always worth asking. And it's worth because again, companies don't want to waste their time either. As much as like you can get a bunch of like clicks on LinkedIn, like companies don't like wasting people's time. It's not good for the business. It's not good for the team. It's not good for the particular manager that's held the KPIs when it comes to number of interviews, to hires, to how long they, you know, they stay with the company and everything else. So,
I love that. Jason comes in here. Will people be afraid to negotiate with the need to get a job so high? Oh, okay. Will people be?
I mean,
some people right now are just happy for an offer.
Right. I think it depends on your situation. I think if you come with a reason to why you want to negotiate, I think most companies, not all, but most companies probably come in at a point where there is a little bit of room of negotiation. I think it comes to understanding the role, how you fit into the role, what you bring to the role, and why the company should want to pay you more. I think a couple of years ago, it was a hell of a lot easier to negotiate a higher salary than it is now, but it's certainly not off the table. And, you know, when you think about it, you know, is $5,000 or $10,000 really worth it for the company to start over? Depends on the role, but for most, if there's an understanding on everybody involved, then, you know, I still think that you should do it, but I think you need to come with a reason why.
100%. I got another topic, Dan. The title of this article was Growing Impatient. Businesses around the world are demanding that their employees come back into the office, but some are more adamant than others. Bank of America can be placed on the come back or else category. The second largest bank in the United States recently threatened workers with disciplinary action if they do not comply. Experts say the push for in-office could backfire on employees as workers reported they were more unhappy at work. It's getting harder to find a remote job in the U.S. I know we've talked about this, but this will never get old. I think disciplinary action is absolutely wild to me.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I called this 3 years ago. I don't like to, you know, be the soothsayer, the notion.
You don't like to brag and like,
I don't like to pat myself on the back, but like, you end the pandemic, you get to a point where commercial real estate, the amount of money companies invested in, how poor companies usually are at managing remote employees, building remote culture, and then getting through this idea that, hey, it's okay if somebody's not at their desk from exactly 8 to 5, but they get their work done. It requires companies to be a little bit more thoughtful about what work is, what work needs to get done. How do I measure that work? When can that work be done? But I called it 3 years ago. There's no cataclysmic change that happened the companies are going to be like, you know what? Remote work is here to stay forever. The ball is now in the company's court, right? A couple of years ago, it was in the candidate court. Now it's we're in a position where companies can say, hey, fine, we will let you go. We can save potentially money. We can bring that person back in-house. We can go back to our old archaic management styles and everything else. And companies have this idea, and whether it's true or not, it's not what this debate is, of this idea of water cooler talk and non-forced interaction with one another. You and I sitting next to each other are going to have a far better conversation, in my opinion, than us talking over Zoom. It seems a little contrived. On the flip side, does that mean that work is better or not? There's competing data on both sides about productivity at home versus in the office. There's competing data about overall happiness. There's competing data on routine and the idea of going into an office and working and what that means to the human psyche of being able to leave. But it's not a surprise that commercial real estate is one of the largest sectors of our economy. Companies want to use that space that they've already rented or owned. And it's easier right now because they can say, okay, fine, then we'll just let you go and we'll hire somebody else. And then that's where we've gotten right now. I still think that there's a lot more remote jobs than there were 5 years ago. There's a hell of a lot more hybrid jobs than there were a few years ago. But this was like to be seen from a mile away, right? Like, I know some people want to live in fantasy land, but the idea that we're just going to move to this completely remote hybrid coffee shop, you know, work from home, no more commute, jail like cell. It just was too pie in the sky. Yeah, your jail cell.
It's interesting.
It's a cross-cutting endeavor too.
It's interesting you brought this up. I want to read this article that literally came out today from The Market Brief, which is a Morning Brew kind of spinoff. Office meltdown, bold prediction. The CEO of Starwood Capital, Barry Sternlicht, thinks the commercial real estate crisis will result in $1 trillion of losses. The real estate billionaire said the office building market was once worth $3 trillion. Now it's worth $1.8. Mm-hmm. That's substantial.
Yeah. I mean, it's impacting commercial real estate. It's impacting, you know, a lot of your metro center and downtown area restaurants, coffee shops, bars, areas. There was a push to other, you know, I know Tampa's exploded, you know, during since the pandemic, you know, Montana, Idaho, you know, Wyoming, there's a lot of states that people move to try to get away. I think, you know, you're also seeing companies cut salaries of people that moved away from some of these larger cities, right? Are starting to tier their employees. I saw, you know, a study yesterday that, you know, there's a ton of companies that if you're in San Francisco and you move to Iowa City, they're starting to cut that salary because part of that, pardon me, increased cost of employment is also correlated directly to cost of living. Whether you agree with that sentiment or not, it's factually true. But at the end of the day, you're starting to see, and companies right now have the control, you're seeing that companies trying to cut costs, trying to bring people back to the office, which is like for most people a sunk cost. It all makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Thomas brings up kind of an interesting topic. I think I've said this in one of my guidance counselors 2.0s recently, but I still love applying for hybrid roles. Guaranteed hire, because everybody is trying to apply for remote roles only. I think there's a lot of validity in the statement right here. I think if you are having a really hard time finding a job, I think you need to look at hybrid or on-site roles, because there's going to be a lot less resumes in those job postings.
I have a ton of companies that say, hey, you know, this is a remote role, but if this person is in Tampa or nearby, we would really like to sit down with them, you know, once a month or twice a month. You know, I think that you're going to see an air of hiring where people are going to favor a more local candidate than not. And like, I hate to beat the drum here, but like, we could have seen this from a mile away, right? Like there shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, like whether you agree with it or not, like this shouldn't be a surprise that once you saw a slight downtick in the economy, companies are going to say, hey, we have this building that nobody's using that we're still paying for. We have managers that don't know how to manage remote employees, because like it kind of came out of nowhere for most. right?
Yeah, and nobody was trained in it.
Right, and there's not ways to really kind of retrain those new habits. Like there is, but it's very, very hard for most when you're used to being around your team and you're used to doing stand-ups. And now if I look at you on Zoom, like, and I see if you're wearing glasses and your computer monitor constantly switch when we're supposed to be talking, like there is going to be this kind of this idea that, hey, maybe this person's not paying attention, or maybe there's just not the same connection, right? And so companies are always going to revert back to what they know, because what they know is far better than what they don't know. And it takes like a true strategic thought to actually, I think, hey, maybe there's an alternative way that we can measure productivity and performance. And so far, there's very few that have figured that out.
100%. Yeah, Nicole comes in here. There are so many cities that get tax incentives for companies and people in offices, drives commerce in the cities. The last 3 years, seen a heavily publicized issue with work from home. Not that it's all bad, but just like everything else, when stress is back, and I've seen things like workers taking 2 roles remote. Yeah, I've seen that as well. Yeah. Simply not working there. Yeah. So again, like I said, I mean, it's never going to be a perfect situation. Whether you're
right. I mean, but that's how like everything is, right? Like a few bad apples are going to spoil it for folks, right? And there's massive security issues when people are farming out work when it comes to IT. Obviously. I'm struggling with what I'm trying to say here, other than I still think hybrid is going to be, it's ingrained, right? I think it works for a lot of people. I think it makes sense for a lot of people right now. It's almost mandatory for nearly every company to be able to attract talent. I think remote work is going to continue to dwindle a little bit, but I do think that there are a lot of companies that are going to stay remote. I still think that there are going to be a lot of remote roles. And then I do think when you see an uptick in the economy and people are starting to hire more, there's going to become some desperation where they need to hire certain people with certain skill sets, and they'll go back to hiring a little bit more remote. So I think we're in a little bit of a cyclical environment where right now it seems like everybody's poo-pooing remote. I do think that once you start to see more hiring, you're going to see more remote, you're going to see more work from home. But like, as companies control the job market right now, you're starting to see them revert back to their ways.
Yep, 100%. Well, there was one topic we didn't even get to about AI and affecting the global market. But I have a hard stop, so we will. Yeah, we can get to it. We can get to it next week.
Okay.
All right, friends.
Well, thanks everybody for joining in.
Answer this season. Okay. Yeah, no, that was fun. That was fun. Like I said, we don't have any guests on the books yet for next week. So we'll be back next week. If y'all watching or listening in the future and do have a topic that you want us to cover or just give us thoughts on, obviously you can show up live and ask some questions. But if you do, just send us you can now send DMs on LinkedIn to pages. So send us a DM on LinkedIn. We'll get to any questions or concerns you may have. But again, Dan, I appreciate you, my guy. For everybody who's tuning in, thank you so much. You know, we need to the blessing. Thank you, because because you know how Travis, Jason, Kelsey have like the was it the 92%ers, right? I think
that's what they call them?
What they call their crew. Yeah, so like we need a tagline. I think
it's 100%ers, because everybody can be
100%ers. There you go. I love it. All right, y'all. Well, you guys have a good one. We'll see y'all next week. Peace.